Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, March 28th. I'm Ray Graff. Welcome to the first gardening program of the spring. Joining us today, Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, and Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They are here to answer your questions and help make sure your yard is the envy of the neighborhood. Give us a call if you have a question, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Now, as you know, the gardening program always popular, so best to get in line early, and that number again is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Seedlings, soil treatments, your gardening calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us to answer your gardening questions today, the familiar voices that you know and love. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. And Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. And the number to call if you have a gardening question is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Bob, Fred, Greg, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here.
Yeah. Thanks for having
us. Happy spring.
You guys are brimming with optimism because the spring is
it's not snowing.
Well, that's a good point.
Frost is leaving the ground.
Yeah, frost is pretty much gone where the sun hits.
Yep. But not too quickly. Fred was excited about the fact that this is not rushed headlong into spring.
That's correct. You know, a lot of times people, and I don't blame them, you know, your antsy, you just want to get all the snow out of here and it's taking too long and, you know, a couple of weeks of cold temperatures, especially at night, really slows that process down. And everyone wants it out, but I'll tell you what, the plants, so be a little patient. The plants really like it when it kind of goes slow. The longer the snow sort of takes to get out of your lawn, the better the trees and shrubs are going to appreciate that sort of continued watering that you'll get into that early part of spring. Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize spring, that's why there's a lot of burn bans. It's not always super wet in the springtime. No, right. There's always not a lot of available
ground's
water.
Well hydrated now.
It is right now.
Which is good, is good.
And not having those fluctuations that sort of brings things on sooner than they would normally bloom, you know, that's just better for all of us.
Yeah, kind of a steady increase rather than getting
up. What's your magnolia bloom prediction? I'm shooting for star magnolias by the 15th of April. Might be a little early, but
it depends on what it does the next couple of weeks. Hard to know. Yeah.
We're going to be a little later than that at Landis, I think. Okay. At least probably another week after.
It's always a fun thing to do is try to guess when everything's going to
Do you guys have
through.
A pool? Some money involved?
This is radio, right? We should talk about that?
Well, yeah, you're right.
Of course not, right?
Okay. We don't bet our best.
Understood, old boy. All right, let's go to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Maria in Olive. Maria, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
When we built this house 11 years ago, we put in a dog fence and a volunteer wild grapevine started to grow over the top of the fence. And it looked quite beautiful. And so we let it go and we trimmed it every year as if it was ornamental. And it was, and everyone loved it. And now it's completely out of control because we trimmed it when it started to come down the fence, which we didn't want because then you couldn't see into the yard. And so we kept trimming it, and now it's very thick and twisted on top of the fence and kind of top heavy. And I'm wondering if you have any tips on how we can thin it out. It seems hopeless.
It would be very easy. You could start from the beginning with that, right to the ground, or leave a trunk if you have those existing.
You mean cut it completely back?
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is the time of year to do that type of rejuvenation, what we call rejuvenation pruning. And this happens with not just – it's also lilacs. It's not just grapevines. It's lilacs, forsythia, rhododendrons. All can be rejuvenated along with a whole bunch of other plants. And the time to do that, just as Greg said, is kind of right now, before the buds actually open.
But won't it take years and years to I mean, it's about 20 feet long.
Not with that.
Or more.
The established root system that you have will allow it to grow, you know, much faster than the way it grew initially. And we're suggesting you can, that's as far as you can go. You can leave as much of it as you would like. Maybe you want to, you know, it's in a fence and it's hard to probably
get
pull
it off.
Right.
It's going to be
tough
to get
so
it off.
Cutting it the way we just suggested would probably be the quickest, most efficient thing to do. However, if you can get 10 feet of some, you know, major branching or basal growth, you know, to be there, some one long 10-footer in the going left and one long 10-footer going right, that would work out too.
I think the moral of the story is you're not going to hurt it.
Yeah,
you can do almost anything to it and it's going to come back.
Yeah, but do watch, because as it gets heavier and heavier, grapevines, I mean, these are going to get, this is going to get really heavy and it could even crush your fence as time goes on. I've seen them do that before. So at some point you may need to make a more hard cut. But it would come back very rapidly if you did that.
It's the Gardening Show. Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, and Greg Ward are here to answer your questions. The number is 800-348-2551. And Brian is in Red Hook. Brian.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have artillery fungus in my mulch, my landscaping around the house, which produces a lot of black spots on my windows and on my siding. I was just wondering, is there a way of getting rid of that?
Not really in the mulch. I mean, other than stirring it up and getting it to dry out a little bit.
You know, if you don't want to remove a lot of the mulch, you know, but you can just cap it with something that I'm trying to think. I think it's mostly oak. I think it's mostly hardwood that the artillery fungus grows on. So using a cedar or a pine bark would, by capping the mulch you have now, covering it with those, you know, you're going to not give it that opportunity.
Yeah, I was thinking of actually converting from mulch to stone.
Which you could.
And I was wondering, should I remove the mulch first before putting a fabric down, or just put the fabric down and put the stones over the top of that?
Yeah, you could go either way. You know, the thing you have to be careful of with stone is if you're using it around plants, sometimes it causes problems because the stone has no insulating value, and your cold in the wintertime will transmit deeper and more cold into the soil. But you're going to, if you put stone down, you got to put plastic down, whether you remove the mulch or not, depends on how much there is. But you put plastic down.
So put plastic down for the stone?
Yeah, you got to have it underneath the stone. Otherwise, it disappears down into the mulch. Yeah.
And personally, my opinion would be if you have an organic mulch there, is not convert the entire property to stone. That would be my opinion, only because there's a number of reasons, but the organic mulches are doing more than just making your landscape look good. They're actually increasing and actually improving the structure of the soils and the fertility of those soils and the overall health of those plants will certainly do better. If you had a stoned a shrub or tree that you use a lot of stone on and mulch it with versus an organic bark chip, you're going to probably, as long as that bark chip, you know, isn't containing something lethal, you're going to do much better in terms of plant growth long term. So
a walkway can be stone, but garden bed, woody plant or otherwise, should probably not be stone. Yep.
All right, Brian. Well, thanks for the call. It's the Gardening Show on WAMC, 800-348-2551. And Armony in Greenfield, Mass., you're on.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I have a question about pruning my plum tree. I took a workshop once pruning my peach tree, and then I asked the professor what to do, and then he was like, it's more complicated for plum. But is there a certain time of year I should trim it and certain amount of days that it shouldn't rain in order for it not to get diseased? Right now, it's on the north side of my house, and it's getting all this black fungus on it, which I keep spraying with this solution, but it's a little bit, I need to trim it back anyways, but I just don't want to touch it without knowing what I'm doing.
Bob Graves is shaking his head. Why are you shaking your head?
Well, it sounds like what you've got is black knot, if it's these little black growths on the branches themselves.
For sure.
And, exactly.
And that's
exactly.
Really tough to get rid of. Really tough.
You're telling me.
If it's on the outer limbs of the plant and not really forming on the heavier limbs, the inner limbs yet, then pruning it out is what's recommended. They do recommend that every time you prune, every time you go over and make a cut, you take a moment and you sterilize your pruners again.
Yeah, you'll spread it if you don't sterilize your
pruners. Do that in a little bleach and water, or a little rubbing alcohol and water.
Yep. Now, if it is a plum, and it's in the shade, it's weak anyway. Fruit trees, prunus, anything in the prunus family, plums, peaches, cherries, really need to be in a lot of sun. So, the question is, how much effort is it worth for this particular tree?
Yeah, and if you have it all...
It's grown really big. It's just that, in the summer, there's like that high sun, and it gets a lot of sun during the day. My peach tree loves it.
Well, it should be okay.
I just don't know what time of year do I do it. Like for peaches, they say June, and it has to be 3 days of no rain after trimming it. So I, can plan.
So I think we might change that up a little bit. We'd probably recommend the peach and the plum that you do them this month coming April.
Sooner.
Today wouldn't be terrible.
Nope.
The peaches are growing, they're blooming on that first year wood. They're aggressive growers. You are pruning basically every new shoot. You're sort of cutting in half for the most part, depending on the size of them. With plums, they're more like apples and pears. They're blooming on that second year wood, so you're not being as aggressive most of the time. However, you want to go after that knot possibly, so that's going to sort of affect how you prune the tree.
Yeah, and if you do go after that knot, you're going to want to prune those branches back that have that knot beyond the knot to where it's all healthy tissue. So not.
I want to cut. I need to prune it anyways. I want to cut like down to the base of the tree. Like the parts that were coming off of the trunk.
Okay.
Would that be okay?
Guys, it'll be okay.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a lot of good pruning guides online. I think you could try.
All right. We have to take a break.
I was looking for plums. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. And it's okay to prune my raspberry bushes still?
For sure. Yeah, great. Plenty of time to do that.
All right. Let's take a break right here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Bob Graves, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia are here. It's the Gardening Show on Vox Pop. We'll open up the old email box in a moment. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. The number is 800-348-2551. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves are with us today. It's the Gardening Show, first official one of the spring. And a few emails here, and then we'll get back to the loaded phone lines. This one came in from Matt in Sullivan County. Last fall, I discovered there were voles destroying my lawn. Definitely voles, because I caught in mouse traps about 6 of them before the first snow in November. Unfortunately, a squirrel figured out how to spring the traps and eat the peanut butter. I suppose I can try regular ones, but I don't think they'll work very well. What can I do now that spring is here? I have a feeling there are more of them because it took me so long to figure out what was going on. Aside from mouse traps, is there anything else I can do? No pets around. So would poison work? I don't know. And any suggestions would be greatly appreciated.
If you use a rodenticide, a poison, you need to put it in a special plastic container that will not allow any other critter to get to it.
And the trap line is very effective. It takes a little work. I mean, you have to reset the trap.
That's what I would say as well.
Is take a heavy pot or a garbage can, put it upside down over the trap.
So the squirrels can't get in.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the voles will kind of tunnel just a little bit underneath it.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you can find a hole, so you just literally put the trap
right
next to the hole and then a container right over that and a piece of something heavy on top of that, and it should be good.
All right. This one's from our buddy Deanna Fox, who writes, I'm doing a lot of excavation work at my house right now. I'm curious as to how to kill two things. The first is a huge patch, 7 by 50 feet, of ostrich ferns along the side of the house. Should I just scrape them out with an excavator? They retain moisture along the foundation. Discoid. I don't know if that's right. I think discolor the wood siding and are ugly as sin. That's the first question.
Yeah. Well, you know, the ostrich fern is the one where you actually harvest fiddleheads from. That when you see those for sale
right.
in the spring.
So what would we do? We would move them and plant
them
somewhere else.
I would say absolutely. They transplant very easily. So unlike the horrible things like the Japanese knotweed that we battle the Agapodium or Bishop's weeds that you just can't really win this way. Mm-hmm. The great thing about ostrich fern is that there's a big nodule where all the ferns are going to grow from. You could lift those right out. You probably, if you told friends of yours that knew you had ostrich fern, it's ornamental. They sell it. So you almost probably could even have like a dig party and have people take some free. I mean, it works. I've certainly used that type of type of technique, and that works really, really well. Just because she said excavation, I can't help myself. You're looking at targets for work. Sometimes the excavators can cause major problems to the trees and shrubs around your landscape. So for those, you want to take precautions, especially compressing the soil around trees when it's moist.
All right.
So,
the other question she has is the giant hedge of honeysuckle. She wants them gone, but a maple about 20 feet tall has sprung up among the hedge, and she doesn't want to damage that. Should she cut the honeysuckle back and tar over it?
So she could flush all the honeysuckle, get in there, or have someone that can safely cut the honeysuckle to the ground.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is usually recommended is a herbicide treatment of the stump rather than tar.
You
tar is not
tar,
going to do anything.
No.
And if you did that all by hand, the sugar maple is going to be very happy. This is where the excavator might be an issue. If you drive it around the maple, that wouldn't be so nice.
That would be the thing that you wouldn't even think is a problem, but 3 years later, it ends up being one.
Just
and you don't even need to, a lot of times, use any kind of herbicide. If you actually just wait for the spring, the honeysuckle is going to use all its energy to flush, cut it to the ground. It'll have a little bit of stored energy, so it'll send up a weak regrowth. Cut that back to the ground. You probably won't even have to spray anything. You'll get rid of it just by cutting.
Okay. This one is
pretty good luck with that.
This one is from, I don't know, it says anonymous. I have a good luck growing tomatoes and buckets. Unfortunately, every year I get a brown rot, which I solved by spraying on calcium to the leaves. In the spring, I mix all the dirt together and add fresh compost. What can I add to the soil before planting the tomatoes to avoid the brown rot?
It is a calcium issue, so actually that is a good diagnostic. And, you know, just getting a good balanced fertilizer with all micronutrients.
Check your pH.
Yeah, pH would also be a big
If it
one.
Needs lime, that would help. Yep. And also that blossom end rot is often... Or a bottom rot is often caused by inconsistent
watering.
If it gets really wet and really dry and really wet and really dry. So uniform watering.
But lime is a way in which to add calcium.
Calcium.
Yeah. So check the pH if you're not sure what that pH is. And then if it's between 6.5 and 7.0, you're in perfect pH range. And then balanced fertilizer and routine watering consistent.
All right, this one's from James. I'm wondering if you can recommend a few fast-growing tree species that are resistant to climate change but are also able to grow within 25 feet of a forest house and provide beauty and shade.
Yeah. I like red maples. Yeah. They're native.
Acer rubrum. Yeah.
Yeah, Acer rubrum. And there's a million cultivars, not to be confused with the purple leaf Norway maple, which is invasive.
Okay.
River birch would be another good
River birch is an awesome tree, and we could spend an hour on this one.
Yeah. Okay.
For understory, Carpinus blue beech. You plant a few maples, a few river birch, and then you underplant with
or shad, Himalayan.
Yeah,
be another good one.
And you'd have a nice New York native ecosystem there, and they'd probably all do pretty well.
All right, beautiful. This one is from Christopher, who writes, "I'm a greenhorn without a green thumb. Can I reuse the soil from last year in my raised bed? Can I till it to rejuvenate it, or do I need more nutrient-rich soil?"
Yeah, so you brought in soil to the raised bed. If it's the first year, you definitely want to add compost, some organic source, to your soil, just amending that. If it's, I don't know whether you really need to till it. There's a lot of discussion about not needing to till. If it's in a raised bed, often it's really easy not to till because the bed is very tidy. It's already drained. So simply adding the compost, working that in when you plant, so when you're ready to plant, is all you would need to do. Additional fertilizer for edibles, for vegetables, is really going to go a long way. So when you plant an organic fertilizer.
When you're adding stuff like that, check your pH because you never know.
Exactly. You really should start with the pH test because a lot of times you could be adding things and really changing things that are actually pretty ideal or really, making things worse, so forth and so on.
All right, back to the phones we go. And Paul and Sharon Springs. Paul, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Another plum question. Blue or purple plums. Trees are 7 years old. Been in production for 2 years now, so they're right on schedule. West side of the house, full sun, west breeze, pruned by 1st of March each year. As the fruit is three-quarters ripening from green to purple, I get a white fuzzy mold on the plums, and they shrivel up and drop off dead. What do I need to do?
I'd do an organic fungicide, wouldn't you, prior to?
Well, it's definitely fungal related. Mm. You'd want to be doing it well before you actually see this. So probably 3-4 weeks before, just as the fruit is forming, typically, 1st of June. Which fungicide would be the question? And if I'd rather do just a little bit of research offline sometime. So
could be sulfur or copper or a couple other things.
If you wanted to, do the email thing to
contact one of us. And
And why don't we put out the email addresses right now? Start with you, Bob.
It's fadigansnursery.com. And my address is rgraves@fadigans.com.
All right.
And info@wardsnursery.com would work for me.
Okay.
Yeah, and we're landisarboretum.org, and my email is fred@landisarboretum.org.
All right, well, thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551 on the Gardening Vox Pop. Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on.
When's the best time to plant asparagus and hyacinth bulbs, and should you soak them in water before you plant them?
Asparagus, you plant in the spring, so they'll be available, now if you're ordering them mail order or as you go through spring at your local garden center probably. And if they're in a pot already, certainly don't need to soak them. If you get them in bare root, it's always good to make sure they're hydrated, not something you would have to do for very long with asparagus. Hyacinths, we plant those in late September, October, November, even December a little bit. So
you don't plant hyacinths now. And if you buy a bulb for Christmas in a pot, you could plant that, but you can't get the hyacinth bulbs this time of year. It's a fall thing.
Or a pot of hyacinths already forced.
Right, forced for Easter, you could plant that.
You can stick them in, but you're not going to get the blooms until next year.
If, right. If you have them in a pot and they're blooming today in your house, when they're done, you could plant them out in later. In this month, and they'll come back next year.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. Over to Lewis and Rensselaer. Lewis, you're on.
Hi. Fred, Bob, Greg. Fred, we know each other.
Hello. Yeah.
Are you a forester?
Yeah, how you doing there?
Hey, Fred.
Your phone line is not too good. Are you on speakerphone, Lewis?
Yeah.
All right, you sound like you're on an old Radio Shack walkie-talkie. Maybe if you could get off speakerphone, we could hear you a little better.
Off speaker?
Yeah, that'd
be better. Off speaker?
Yeah, that'd be better.
All right, let me see. How's that?
Okay, that's a little better. Yeah. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. I got a couple issues. I got some invasives, but I want to just start off with a quick ground cover for like a steep terrace. So I don't have to mow so much.
You getting sun in that spot? Are you getting sun in that spot or shady?
The one has got a lot of sun, and the other got moderate sun. It's shady. It's sort of shady, but it does get some sun.
Okay. I a lot of times, there's a lot of things that would work, but if you have room, you may want to think about possibly some woody shrubs that are low growing, because they're going to outcompete everything. Daylilies do really good. There's an arsenal of them. Most weeds have a hard time outcompeting those. So a combination of it doesn't always have to be this like one homogeneous ground cover to cover the whole slope. It could be a combination of you actually make it a landscape even on steep. Steep slopes, like I said, a combination of woody shrubs and daylilies, and I'm sure these guys have some extra suggestions as well.
I think the last time I mentioned my new favorite sunny ground cover was barren strawberry, Waldenstinia. I think I've also just thought of the Pennsylvania sedge, which is a little carex. That these are both really easy native plants that are pretty sort of mat for me. The sedge has a little grassy tuft, but I was actually thinking of the the ostrich fern that the first caller had. If you got those ostrich fern, put them in there. They're going to be tall, but they'll definitely take over a spot and keep other things from growing.
Your traditional ground covers like Vinca minor, Myrtle, Pachysandra take a lot of work to get them established.
They do. That's so, why
it's weeding for 3 years and babying them, and so they're sometimes not the best if you're looking to reduce your work.
Yep.
Grass is always the easiest thing.
It is. And, we don't know what kind of soil's there, but if it's got decent moisture and it's fairly good organic, that's one thing. But if it's that harder, often drier sites that we see on slopes, then those ground covers like the Pachysandra and things like that that Bob had mentioned, that's going to be even more, your work's even cut out for you even more. Yeah. So shrubs, daylilies, things that can really tolerate drought, tough sites are going to be your best friend.
All right, Lewis, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Christine in Palatine Bridge. Christine, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. You answered part of my question because we had stone walkways put in and we lost a treasured peony. What I did is I did go out and I was able to find two seeds, just two. So now I'm looking to see what I can do to possibly save this peony, if even just from the seeds.
Well,
where do I plant it? How do I germinate the seeds? I've never done that.
Yeah, so usually peonies are offered by division, not from seed. The seeds are left to the breeders and who cross them and make all those really fun colors. So it's possible whatever seeds you have, once it germinates and grows, may not be exactly what you intended it to be originally. Maybe
that's
one of
fine.
The parents.
I'm fine. Actually, I'm sure the original was grafted onto another because as it aged, the flowers changed.
So it may have been a tree peony that she's talking about now that I'm...
It's a very woody bush.
Yep. So that's what we call those. Those are tree peonies versus the herbaceous peony. A little bit different, but still a peony.
And so those are grafted. So they've taken the herbaceous peony root and they've grafted the stem of the tree peony onto it. They've done that for vigor, for hardiness. That's a whole nother trick in and of itself, but germinating those seeds to get the tree peony, I guess, is probably your only avenue. So germinating the seed, it probably could just be planted in the ground, in the yard, in a nice little spot you mark as tree peony seedlings, and keep them regularly moist. And you can do that this month, and something should pop up.
All right, Christine, thanks for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, The Gardening Show. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves are here to answer your questions. And Kathy in Clinton, New York. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Last fall, I took 5 geranium cuttings, and 3 of them survived the winter. I potted them in potting soil and used rooting hormone, and they rooted very readily. And I've been keeping them in low light and kind of on the dry side, but now that it's coming up on April, they're wanting to take off. And so I was wondering, can I repot them deeper like you would do with tomatoes and get root growth off the longer stem? Or would that just rot the stem?
Yeah, I would not
advise
it.
And then the other question is, you advise repotting them?
I would not bury them deeper than they are now, no. Would not
You could repot them, but just to clarify, the depth you're going to want to keep the same. So larger container, fine, just no deeper.
Yeah, and the reason you're thinking this is because they're getting so leggy?
So my other question was, can I pinch off the new growth that's coming out of the stem, and will they go bushier? Will they send out side shoots?
Yes, that's exactly what you should be doing. Yep.
You need to gradually move them into more sun, too, and try to get them. You can't do it all at once, but gradually move them into more sun before you put them outside.
Okay, so I really kind of need to start hardening them off and getting them used to being outside. And
Yep. And when they eventually make that step outside, introduce them to a shadier area outside first, and then gradually
you may want to put them in more light inside for a little while.
Yeah, more light inside first, then shade outside, and then gradually more light as they harden off. And it won't take them long. These guys are tough, and they like a lot of sun.
Yeah, so you have a good month. A good month before you're going to want to even think of putting them outside, 1st of May at the earliest, and then you're still going to want to watch the weather.
Yep.
But a bright spot in your house, cutting them back, they'll resprout this month.
Yep, you could think about a little bit of soluble fertilizer, too. Houseplants, a good time to sort of start to fertilize houseplants is when they start to want to grow, and that's this time of year.
All right, well, let's take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. It's The Gardening Show. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Barb Graves are here, and we'll be back with the home stretch. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551 if you want to call in. And let's go right back to the phones on The Gardening Show. John in Pittstown. John, you're on.
Hello. I am trying to do a low tonal production of annuals in the spring, and I have no experience with it. And wondered if you might give me some tips here. A couple of things that come to mind is how much frost tolerance I could expect, and local timing. When should I be able to move my seedlings to a low tunnel?
So what town are we in?
I'm from Pittstown.
Pittstown County, up in some elevation.
So a little farther up. Oh, Capitol Hill.
Yeah, it's a higher elevation, same. Yes.
Okay. So we always say Memorial Day is the safe weekend to actually plant them out in the ground. That would probably also go with a container, though containers are movable, so you can get away with doing it sooner. You know, if they're tolerant annuals, that will take a little cold weather, you can have them sprouted up, rooted, looking good, and then start to harden them off by putting them outside during good weather, making sure they don't see too cold a night, a frost or anything, and moving them in and doing that early May. So that you're ready to plant them out after a couple of weeks, so by mid-May.
Yeah, if you're in a tunnel, you could put them out earlier because you have some frost protection. But average last frost around here is the 15th. But the last frost, as you say, is Memorial Day, is the end of May.
My dad and I always use as a reference. Never let us down.
Yep.
So I should not expect them to survive severe cold, even if they're in the tunnel. I'm planting them. I'm going to plant them. I'm thinking 1st of May and put them under the tunnel. But
Depends on what they are. Depends on May. You know, May is variable. So if the tunnel is up in April and the soil is really nice and warm, it's quite possible you could get through May with the tunnel as the only protector.
If you put coleus or impatiens or something out there and it gets a little cold, they're gone.
They're gone. Yeah.
But snapdragons and marigolds.
It's described as a hardy or a tender perennial, and I don't know.
Well, tender perennial is altogether different.
Exactly. Yeah. We didn't catch the name of the plant.
Yeah,
what was the name?
Tanacetum. You familiar with that?
Tanacetum.
Fever.
Yep.
Fever few.
Yep. Yeah. So that'll take a little chilly weather. You know, I would watch the weather if on the 1st of May you've had the tunnel up and you have the 10-day report isn't showing anything colder than 40 degrees, you're all set. And if it's showing some 32s, you know, you might just want to throw a little extra over there.
All right, let's go over to Mike in Gilderland. Mike, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I transferred a blueberry bush, I'd say maybe about 5 feet tall, you know, 3 feet wide, a year ago, this past fall. Last spring, came back, started looking great, had lots of leaves and, you know, looked pretty healthy. And then I'd say in about a month or so, everything just, we even had a couple of blueberries, but everything just started falling off. And then by the middle of the summer, it was done. There wasn't much growing off of it at all. So I'm wondering, you know, is this thing going to come back or should I be cutting it, you know, pruning it or cutting it back or What do you think?
No, you know, the reason why it leafed out initially that following year was from stored energy, and the fact that it did not make it. In other words, everything sort of fizzled out and it died. It looked like it died. Was because the stored energy that it had kind of ran out, and it didn't have enough roots to kind of pull it together and keep it growing. And if it didn't come back in the middle of summer last year, then it's safe to say that at this time of year, you're not going to, you know, this season, you're not going to expect too much out of that plant.
The scratch test is a way to tell if it actually has any life.
Scratch the bark a little bit, see if it's green when you scratch it.
And that'll tell you right there.
I'm not real optimistic.
Very optimistic. But if you do scratch it, you know, just scratch the branches, scratch the, you know, lower down, you know, where it's getting to the thicker part, the trunk. If you scratch it and with your fingernail, you should very easily see green. If you don't, it's brown, then, you know, it's certainly time to replant.
And if it's green, wait, see what happens in May.
Exactly.
Okay. Mike, thanks for the call. It's the Gardening Show. We have Fred Breglia here from Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery, and Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery. We go over to Gene in West Taconic. Gene.
Hi. I'm on speakerphone. Is it okay?
Your speakerphone sounds fantastic. The fidelity is great. Go ahead.
Good. Okay. I have a question about a climbing hydrangea, which I planted years ago at the base of a spruce or pine tree. It has now grown to the very top of that tree, and I've gotten different opinions about whether that is good for the tree or not. So I was wondering what you think. Should it be pruned way back, or can I let it alone?
Well, it depends on what you like better. It's the hydrangea or the tree.
It's not great to have a big vine in a tree like that.
Although if you had to have a vine coexisting in a tree, it's, I guess, a decent vine to coexist with a tree because it's not aggressive. It doesn't want to kill the tree. It doesn't strangle the tree. The tree can tolerate hydrangea.
It's not unlike poison ivy growing on a pine.
It's sort of like a poison ivy bush, although minus the hypo, you know, the reaction when you touch it. But the answer is that, you know, honestly, they probably could coexist. I know of examples where really old climbing hydrangea have stayed with really old trees for a really long period of time, and they're still growing both
side by
side.
It doesn't hurt you to cut it back some if you'd like to. They're pretty easy to come back. They come back.
And that said,
I cut back the bottom of it.
If the spruce or pine, whatever it is, looks good, is healthy, then there's really no problem.
It doesn't look fabulous. So
it's probably less than happy with that. But awesome.
You got to make that judgment as how it looks.
Awesome vine, though. We all really like climbing hydrangea.
Yeah, hydrangea would win out over the tree for me.
Really?
Me too.
I would go for the
hydrangea. An old climbing hydrangea is awesome.
All right, Gene, well, thanks for the call. Now we go over to Susan in Canaan. Susan, you're on.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. So I had a cut down a pine tree about 5 years ago. It was probably about 60 foot in height, and it left, I have like maybe a 6 foot stump that a hammock is attached to, and it lost all the bark about a month or two ago, and I'm wondering how do I treat it so that I maintain it? When the bark came off, there's like a little lace work on the wood inside, so I'm not sure how to treat it and what to do.
That's sort of the home improvement show question.
Okay.
But moisture entering the trunk, right?
Things to live, but I'm giving you something that's dead.
You know, what it is now is it's a pine post.
It is.
And it's going to rot eventually.
We're really talking about an engineering problem now in terms of how do we keep that thing from rotting. So wood preservatives, you know, something that would not be toxic, that would, you know, if it got into the soil around there, it would leach in. You wouldn't want to do
capping.
That. The capping it would certainly be a help. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. And
put a little roof on the top.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, literally you could put it with a wood preservative and then after it.
This is not a post. This is a large as a sumo wrestler's thigh.
Wow.
So really big post.
Yeah. So a little tin or copper roof right on top would be really pretty.
Almost like keep the water off it. That'll
pylons on a dock. You know,
what I'm concerned with is...
Actually, I have an old railroad wheel attached on the top. But so you say put wood preservative on it. Do I have to do anything to... maybe get rid of whatever insects may be living inside it?
No. I don't think so.
I think I would just make sure that it's really thoroughly dried out before you put any kind of product on it. So, you know, wait for that dry period of time. You know it's pretty dry. Try to put some kind of product that will help you stretch the life of this stump so you can, you know, certainly have that use of it in your yard for years to come. Some kind of top to keep the rain off. Ultimately, I think you're going to look at some kind of replacement, but we could stretch that out for probably quite some time.
Let's go now to Robert in Albany. Robert, you're on. Hello.
Question about a holly bush.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've got a small holly I put in last spring. It was doing fine over the summer and into the winter, and now I look at it, and all the leaves are uniformly shriveled at the edges.
Yeah, it's mostly winter burn. They call it winter burn. Most of it's from the cold temperatures and the wind. And at that, if it's just a little bit of like this sort of like unsightly leaves, that should all bounce back this coming spring.
I like that question because about last month we were saying everything looked really good. The boxwood would look good. The hemlocks look good.
Yeah.
All the evergreens. But right now they're actually starting to show a lot of what the stresses were the winter. So you're seeing a lot of discoloration on evergreens. Hollies are no exception. But we really want to wait until May before we really know.
Is you got to just wait and see what happens.
A guy told me that he thought maybe it was a water issue and I should give it some dense watering.
Best thing to do is nothing for the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Just leave it be and hope for the best.
Yeah, it's pretty common on like broadleaf evergreens to see winter damage at this time of year. If you didn't see any, I'd be surprised. So
it's a drying out injury, but not because the ground is dry.
Right.
It's because those leaves lose more moisture than they can replace.
During the winter time.
So they'll lose color, continue to lose color. New growth should come from the live stems, and that will happen by mid-May.
But I think you'd be all right.
Vox Pop on WAMC. It's the Gardening Show. We have Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward here. Let's go to Brian in Herkimer. Brian.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Hey, so last year we planted a new lawn at our camp. It was bare dirt, new construction. And I put down just a plain landscaper's mix. I'm not real picky about my lawn. And despite the hot weather, it came in really good and grew really thick. And then towards the end of the summer, it started to die off. And I noticed on the bag, I didn't look at it before I bought it, but it had a lot of annual in it and not a whole bunch of perennial.
Yep.
So I'm wondering this spring, what, if anything, I should do. Should I put down more seed or should I just let it?
No, you need to reseed it. You know, you can get a mix that's not terribly expensive, but the things with annual rye, you don't want for a lawn. It's just not appropriate. It's an erosion control thing, temporary. So just go through and reseed it with a mix that's got all perennial grasses.
Yep. All perennial grass? Okay. All right. Good. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian. 800-348-2551 is our number. Helen in Germantown. Hello, Helen.
Hi. This is about a very nice elm tree. It's like a Princeton cross. It's in our front yard. It's very vigorous, 12-inch girth. Maybe 20 feet. Oh, but over the last 3 years, I've seen steady yellow belly sapsucker damage.
Yep.
And this year, what worries me is there's a little section of bark that's disappeared, and it's too high. It's not like deer rub or anything. And I'm afraid, are we on the way to losing this tree? It looks so great otherwise.
Yep. You know, with the yellow belly sapsucker and any of those sapsucker birds that do this damage, typically it rarely ever kills the tree. But in really bad cases where they continue to feed in that same area, they cause such a loss of the cambium that actually you'd start to see a cambium decline. And then, of course, bark would sort of come off. So the times that I've had this over at the Arboretum and had to deal with those birds or deter them from continuously feeding on that area is I've just used a piece of old household screen and I kind of just put it over the areas and I can use a little thumbtack or a little staple and just kind of temporarily affix it to the tree's trunk, kind of wrap it around that part. And the birds very quickly will go away and they learned a new behavior very fast. So once you break the cycle, they rarely just come right back to the tree. So that would just temporarily make them, and you could get up there with a ladder and just kind of put a piece here, put a piece there, put a piece there, wherever you see the feeding. And it's worked really well with me. So, and just
told
the birds to go elsewhere.
Asked you,
sooner. So.
It's not too late. I think it's you're going to be okay with that tree.
It's a pretty vigorous tree.
They're pretty vigorous. I've had good luck with them.
Well, Helen, thanks for the call. Now we go to Paula in Olive Bridge. Paula.
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Great.
So I have rhododendron bushes that are probably at least 35 years old in front of my house. They've done beautifully for the last 25 years that I've been there. And this year, the leaves just collapsed, and they still look like it's 15 degrees out, even with these sunny days.
Yep.
There are a few leaves along the bottom of the bushes that look normal, but most of them are just collapsed.
So they're still green, just curled and hanging downward.
Yeah,
looking like it's very cold.
But not a good sign.
Well, actually, I would say that it's because they're very cold.
Yeah.
That the frost is still there. Where are you?
In Olive Bridge.
Up in Olive Bridge.
So if the frost is in the ground, and you know, and we've been having some cold days, that is the typical look of the plant. When the sun comes out and the plants are thawed out, then the leaves pick up. So
if they don't, you know, it may be a desiccation injury, and particularly on older rhododendrons, I would look for two things. I would look for notching on the leaves to see if there's any black vine weevil, which will eat the roots, and I'd also look on the stems from about 3 or 4 foot down
for the bore
to see if there's any damage, because that's a rhododendron borer, which may have eaten the plumbing, basically.
Okay.
If they don't recover, you may have an insect problem.
Yeah. They have recovered earlier in the winter. They've been up and down with the warm days, but now they're just drooped. So you're saying it's probably some kind of insect.
Well, it could be.
The fact that you've seen a bouncing of good and bad, that makes me think less insect.
Yeah.
Because insect when an insect eats the vascular, there's no coming back. It only continues to look worse.
So there's hope.
I think that you're going to be okay.
Yeah, leave them alone.
The desiccation, we've been noticing the burning of leaves. Things are still waking up, and so I think just being patient.
Again, the scratch test up towards the top. Scratch that bark and see if it's...
All right, let's quickly go over to the home of the World Bocce Ball Championships, Rome, New York. James is on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. My wife and I, we just bought a new home in the fall. We moved in September, and there were two pine trees in the backyard that were dead. One was totally dead. The other one's about 90% dead. The shorter one, about 20 feet tall, I cut down and I dug out the stump and I replaced it with a willow tree sapling.
Hmm.
Not long after, I talked to my neighbor, and my neighbor said that the previous owner had sprayed something on the ground under the pine trees to keep, I guess, some of the brush out.
Okay.
And over the years, it slowly killed the tree.
All right.
I'm a little concerned now that's going to, you know, spell bad news for my
All right. We have about 20 seconds here.
You should be okay. If he used a brush killer and he got it on the trees, it would have all the damage would have occurred that season, and there should not be, unless it was a really, you know, toxic product, a normal brush killer would not have that long-term residual, so you should be fine.
Okay. Very, very quickly here, Fred, how do we find out more about the Landis Arboretum?
Yeah, it's landisarboretum.org, and my website or my email is fred@landisarboretum.org.
Greg Ward, Nursery.
Ward's Nursery, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, wardsnursery.com.
And Bob Graves, Fadigans.
And it's Fadigans, FADDEGONS.com.
Oh, geez, the whole show's gone now.
There goes those extra seconds we
thank
have.
Thank you guys for being here. Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. Mark Lawson Antiques, Jewelry and Coin, Saratoga Springs and Colony, New York. Since 1992, jewelry, gem, diamond buyer, gold, silver, coin collections, and fine art. MarkLawson.com. Curtis Lumber, featuring Anderson Windows, Therma-True Doors, Owens Corning Shingles, Valspar Paints, Cabot Stains, and more at 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. And Identity Eyewear, Albany, New York, specializing in distinctive eyewear, European styling, and prescription and non-prescription sunglasses. Eye exams by appointment, EYEDENTITY, EyewearAlbany.com. Thanks again to Fred and Greg and Bob and whoever was on the show. Tomorrow, oh my gosh, it's Food Friday. We talk coffee. and we could use a cup right about now. Stand by for news.